All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Monday, March 29th, 2021. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly revisionist magazine. Please do subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.com for all the details. All right, with that said, let me introduce our special guest this evening. James Hake is joining us for the very first time. James works closely with Jesse Lee Peterson, a conservative talk show host and pastor, and also hosts his own program, The Hake Report. James, welcome to the program, sir. How are you this evening?
Thank you, John. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's been a beautiful Monday here in Southern California. This weekend was really nice as well, so definitely enjoying the weather. I'm glad that we were able to connect. We actually met. Well, I was on Jesse Lee Peterson's show. I think it had to have been in 2015, and we kind of met back then and have kind of stayed in touch over the years, and I've been meaning to reach out and see if you'd come on my podcast, so I'm glad we were able to work this out today.
Nice.
Yeah, so kind of just to get started, do you want to just like introduce yourself and kind of talk about your experience in the alternative independent media working with Jesse Lee Peterson?
Yeah. I started working with Jesse Lee in late 2013. I was attending his church since 07, and he invited me to be his new producer because his producer was going to be a school teacher for a school that he was opening at the time. And so I just, no training in media at all. His PR guy was producing and kind of trained me on how to work with him. And I've seen how since going to his church, I saw how the media would go after him because he would do these Fox News hits, or he would preach about, how women are taking the country in the wrong direction and stuff like that. And I would just saw the smears upon him and upon anybody who told the truth. And I just got more and more interested in politics because of him, because he broke it down to just simple right and wrong. And he had me start a show with a couple of guys over there, and then I struck out on my own in late 2017. So it's been fun, and I've gotten to know you and a few other people out there who are just trying to, give us some representation amongst Christians, amongst men, amongst whites. And it's pretty crazy how we've been just marginalized more and more over the last even 10 years or 5 years. It's wild.
Yeah, absolutely. So you said you started, it would have been like 2013 is when you really started working directly with the radio program. That's cool. And Jesse Lee Peterson is broadcast Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific. So he's up early doing his show.
Yep.
And if I'm not mistaken, is it syndicated? I'm not sure exactly where. I mean, you can go right on his website and follow it, or the YouTube channel, but is it also syndicated nationally?
No, it was on several terrestrial radio stations, but we broke off from those and just started streaming on YouTube and DLive, Trovo, and just the online audio, as well as we have an audio feed, but we primarily do the video feed with a live chat. And that's really been successful for us. At one point, he was on Newsmax TV for about a year in like 2018, but now it's pretty much online only.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And Jesse Lee Peterson came on my radar back in probably about then, 2012, 2013, 2014, I think even. Because, I mean, he was like one of the only sort of mainstream conservatives that was talking about the war on white people, right? Which was becoming very, very obvious. And it certainly is today. I mean, there is just an outright attack on white males, especially in America and really across the Western world. And, you know, back then, like I said, he was really like the only sort of mainstream conservative that was making it a point to defend white people. And it was sort of ironic because, of, you know, I'm sure most people listening are aware Jesse Lee Peterson is a black man.
Right.
So it made it even more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's for him and for me, it's just simple right and wrong. It's so obvious. And I remember even as a seventh grader and eighth grader, like I was growing up amongst all these Hispanics and Asians, and I knew that this whole racism thing was a big joke, that Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson were just an utter joke, right? And I would always like joke around, poke fun at my friends who would say something that was kind of, you know, the different stereotypes of whites being smarter or nerdier or whatever. I would be like, why? Because I'm white? They would say something to me and I would kind of egg them on that. And you're right. It has only gotten more obvious and more ridiculous. It's just divorced from reality.
Yeah, it definitely is, and there's very few people that are talking about it. Definitely in the mainstream, but you know, virtually nobody is talking about these sorts of controversial topics. So, it was interesting seeing Jesse do that, and he was interviewing. I remember he had like Kyle Hunt on back then.
Who
was doing like the White Man March and that sort of thing. So it was interesting, and I've kind of followed Jesse ever since then. And of course, he was a big Trump supporter. I think you guys probably still. It's safe to say, you know, you guys are still pretty big Trump supporters. What are your thoughts on Trump's presidency? I mean, he was just, you know, allegedly lost the 2020 election, which we can talk about. I have a very hard time believing that.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on like the Trump movement, the Trump presidency in general?
Overall, I am happy with Trump. I know that I knew going in that he was, willing and eager to be nice to blacks. You know, he was from his business days, he was getting these awards with these rappers and with the NAACP and stuff like that, I feel like. So I knew going in that he would be kind of kissing up in a sense to blacks and gays and women, because he's basically a New York liberal and a businessman and just a sort of a practical living in the world type of a guy. So I knew that he would be, he wouldn't be like hardcore or conservative Christian in that sense. But I knew also that he stands on when he really believes something, you know, like when he knew that what he said about Mexico not sending their best, he stood on that despite boycotts and stuff before his presidency. And when he said that thing about those women who think that they know what to do with America, but they need to take care of their own homes first, he stood on that, and he was called racist for, you know, telling the squad to go back, you know. So, and with the Charlottesville situation, I loved how he was really the only one in the mainstream to tell the truth that there was violence on many sides and very fine people on both sides. In fact, I felt that he was a little too generous to the left, but he's always been like a fair-minded, independent thinking boomer. And you're not really used to that. So I'm happy with him. I know that there are some people who are very disappointed in him, or they got alienated from him, and some people just outright, lost their support for him. But I feel
that would include myself.
Oh yeah. what was it that, or what were your main gripes with him?
Well, you know, I guess really to me he was more. I've always tried to be objective and fair when assessing Trump, and I think it's clear that he did accomplish some good things, right? I mean, he thoroughly discredited the mass media. Yeah. Which, in my mind, is probably the most important thing that he could have done. And, you know, even before he got into office, he was, you know, I for example, I remember that very first debate on Fox News, and he stood up and said, look, I don't have time for political correctness, right? Like, I'm going to say what's on my mind. I don't have time for this. And just that, those sorts of things, I mean, it's very sort of basic and elementary, but they were so important because nobody else was really saying anything like that.
Yeah.
So, like, just his presence in politics, I think, really changed a lot for the good and made people sort of see through how just totally dishonest and really evil the media is. I mean, he was up there calling the media the enemy of the American people. I think that's how he phrased it, and that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yep.
So that, I mean, that really is, to me, in my mind, the most important thing about Trump. I think that he had good instincts and good intentions, but he just got eaten up, man, as soon as he got in office. And yeah. It was and again, you know, he was working against virtually the entire political and media establishment. I mean, Everybody was after him. I was actually rereading some of the old I was reading Glenn Greenwald, for example, just the other day, and he was talking about the whole Russiagate situation. And it's crazy. I mean, we sort of like forget about that, but like as soon as he got in office, there was a very coordinated, organized effort to derail his presidency, to get him, basically to try to remove him from office, to stymie and everything that he was trying to do. And it involved the deep state. Obviously, it involved the media. The CIA was going after him. I mean, he had hostile actors operating throughout his administration. And what killed me was that in many cases, he's the one that is appointing these people into these positions.
True.
So it just never made any sense. I mean, he was just, in my view, a huge disappointment. He had a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And just a total disappointment, especially the last year of his presidency, 2020. I mean, talk about a color revolution unfolding across America. That's exactly we saw in 2020.
Yep.
And, you know, he was out there tweeting tough about the BLM protesters, but didn't actually do anything. Same thing with Antifa. And then, making matters worse, he went full steam ahead into this whole fake COVID pandemic. And now all he talks about is, you know, due to his efforts, we were able to get all these totally dangerous and unnecessary vaccines into the arms of millions of people across the world. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the main thing that is worth pointing out is just his ability to discredit the media and to get people thinking and realize like how hostile the media really is and how dishonest they are. So again, that's really the main thing. But I think overall he was a major disappointment. Had a lot of potential, but wasn't able to live up to it.
I honestly didn't expect a lot of change. I didn't really know what to expect. I was hungering for a politician to stand on when he said something true. And that's what he did, pretty much over and over again, you know? And they just went wild against him. I don't know who else he could have appointed, you know, because the one guy who was faithful to him is the guy that he fired after, I don't know if it was pressure from Mike Pence or what, but General Michael Flynn, who was purportedly a nationalist and never, to my knowledge, said a bad word about Trump, even after being, you know, fired or asked to resign or whatever. And you're right. There were, I don't know who would, the Senate has to approve these people, and the Senate are such cucks, if you will, that, I mean, the House is basically the same thing as the Senate, right? And look at what the House did to Congressman Steve King, who all he did was support Western civilization, and they smear-mongered this guy.
Yeah, and he was ran out of Congress. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, it was a bunch of Jewish groups that were funding all of the primary candidates against him, and ultimately, ultimately, you know, he ended up losing the what election? I think that would have been the 2018 election, right?
It might have been, or it might have been like a special election or something, but I just remember Rona McDaniel tweeting something to the effect of, oh, we can't have white supremacy in our party. And she's like celebrating this thing. She's the head of the RNC, right?
The chairwoman.
Yeah. Exactly. Mitt Romney's niece, and she doesn't belong. We haven't had a decent chair of the Republican Party. I mean, I don't know if you even consider yourself a Republican. I wouldn't blame you. But Republicans, I thought, were for pro-America, pro-God, pro-family, pro-freedom of speech, you know? And they're just caving endlessly to the Democrats. So my point with that is, I don't know who Trump could appoint who wouldn't turn on him, you know? It's like hard to find good help these days. So that's kind of my excuse for Trump appointing people who end up turning on him and undermining him and being a total disappointment.
Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah. Well, and Trump even really sort of fractured the GOP just generally, like as soon as he entered the political scene, right? I mean, it was basically like the establishment GOP was very much against Trump. I mean, you had never Trumpers, you know, people like running the party. And then you had like the more populist America First type. And you still see that playing out today.
Yeah.
And it's a joke, man. I mean, politics in general in America are such a disgrace. I mean, these people are unbearable. Yeah. They're so fake. They're so phony. They're total traitors. I mean, almost to a man or woman.
Yes.
You know, they want to go and talk about gaslighting. I mean, they're still going on about this alleged insurrection at the Capitol.
I know.
It's so ridiculous. Meanwhile, you know, BLM and Antifa have like literally engaged in a genuine insurrection against the country over the course of the past year, and they barely even get a mention, let alone a congressional investigation and everything else, you know. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. They're accusing cops without any evidence of racism, of murder, and it's just endless smears. And it's the term Black Lives Matter itself is a smear upon whites, because it's trying to imply that we don't know that your life matters, but you're the ones who are throwing your lives away. And it's just such an insult. And it's so, like you said, it's just so ridiculous and stupid and fake.
Yeah. And like everything, we live in like an upside down political reality where like everything is turned on its head.
Yeah.
Everything is backwards. And I guess it's been like that for quite some time. But I mean, geez, especially today, you know, it's really crazy.
I think it's meant to make the sane people go insane with outrage and anger and just drive people nuts, because people can, like, normal people can see through this. But there's, I think it's meant to make us mad and make people like act out in the wrong way. Like, they want whites to commit so-called terror attacks against people of color or against Jews or whatever. They want that. They love, they
falls
want their
right into their narrative.
Yeah. And so I think that they're just because the POCs, for the most part, either aren't paying attention or they're right along with this hatred of white people because either the brainwashing or they're just angry themselves. And so I just feel that that's another reason that I loved Trump, was because he stood for actual like love and unity and yet told the truth for the most part. He didn't, yes, he did kiss up in a certain ways and but overall he maintained a level of dignity as a old boomer, somewhat Christian, somewhat conservative white man. And it was so nice when he would just tell a black NPR reporter, "That's such a racist question. Why would you say that? That's such a racist." So he's calling a black girl racist. And I just love that boomer, just straight down the line mentality of him. So it was just so refreshing. And yet you never saw him get down. No matter what attacks, he was never down in his spirit. So that, I felt that that set a really good example. And I think a lot of people returned to Christianity because they saw the evil against him and they looked at him and like, why this reaction? So I felt, I just love that about him. And I think that that's an important lesson that whites, men, Christians can take hold and avoid falling for the victim thing, because they are really marginalizing and smearing and persecuting us. So it's not a good thing.
Yeah, and it's almost like the establishment hated Trump not so much for what he did, but really like kind of what he represented.
Yep.
Like a strong male leader, you know, a guy that you know, was just a sort of a natural, you could say, you know what I mean? He had that natural charisma, charm, leadership ability.
Yes.
And that scared the heck out of him, especially with a lot of his rhetoric about, you know, building a wall and deporting illegals and putting America first. Although, you know, as I've sort of mentioned, a lot of that didn't even actually get accomplished for a variety of reasons. But yeah, I think that was really the main thing, is what he symbolized, what he represents, like traditional, you know, masculine Western Christian civilization in general.
Right. And you couldn't get more reasonable than him. He was like quite, people are like, he would say they have to go back. And a reporter would ask, what if they have nowhere else to go? Then we'll work with them, but they have to go back. And so he was a perfect example of, he's not just blindly and heartlessly throwing people off to the side. He was ready to be reasonable, but that's not what they want. They don't want anything to be reasonable. They just want, it's so female-minded what they're pushing right now, pretending that these are children coming across the border and that we should accept them. It's talk about breaking up families. Give me a break.
Yeah, well, and the sad thing is in many cases, a lot of these kids are caught up in this, you know, caught up in like human trafficking. They're basically just used as pawns.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
in this whole game. Yeah, it's very, very sad. And that is a direct result of not enforcing our laws and not, you know, having this fake sympathy for these kids and these, they're frankly economic migrants. I mean, they just want to come over here to make money. And I understand that. I don't necessarily blame them, but look, you got to figure out your own country, get your own country back on track. You know,
I really think we're full over here
in America. We're good.
I think that's why whites are so hated, is because we're so nice, and nice is only inviting just hatred and genocide and just endless attacks. Because if you look at us, we're like the nicest people in the country. And yeah, we're being smeared as the ones hating the Asians, the ones hating the blacks, the white supremacists. And it's so divorced from reality.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when having like a sort of like pro-white racial consciousness is pathologized and made to seem as if it's like oppressive or evil or genocidal. And of course, a lot of that ties into the official World War II narrative, which I have I have a big problem with, a big critiques of. But yeah, it kind of all goes back to that. And think about it. I mean, whites are literally the only group of people in America that are not allowed to have a positive racial consciousness, or to even think about themselves as a unique, distinct group of people with interests and with, you know, political interests, certainly, that are worth championing and even like formulating, even thinking about, you know?
Yeah. And what's ridiculous is when you think about it, like, the POCs never had it so good. When we thrive, they thrive. But they don't think of it in that way, and they just are going to destroy themselves as they try to destroy us.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the whole idea that we live in like a white supremacist country is just totally absurd. I mean, again, total gaslighting. It's like literally the total opposite of reality. You know, is there even one single like pro-white political group out there that hasn't been like, you know, railroaded or bankrupted or smeared? I mean, think about it. There's literally thousands of organized groups championing the interests of Jews and blacks and Asians and gays and, you know, illegal aliens and refugees. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Well, look at the Proud Boys. You couldn't get more like, I don't like the term vanilla, more like trying to please everybody, being nice to the gays. We're not racist. We hate Nazis. We're multiracial, and they are. And they're just because they don't sufficiently hate whites, they get thrown, and because they're fairly popular, or were, they get completely like trashed as a terrorist organization because right. they defend innocent people against Antifa. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah, well, and there, you know, there's like headlines of like Enrique Tarrio, a photo of him, talking about, oh, look at this, the white supremacist Proud Boys with with Enrique Tarrio as their leader, who's like, what is he? I don't know if he's Dominican or what he is. I mean, he's definitely not like a, you know, pure white, obviously.
Maybe Cuban and Dominican or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it is just no amount ridiculous.
Yeah, you're right. No amount of pandering to their narrative is going to help anything. Just be shamelessly. Who cares if it's all white? It's about the ideas, right? So yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, I'm curious. You guys were covering. I mean, you guys are covering politics every day, and of course, covering the 2020 election. What are your thoughts on the election in general?
I felt that allowing every idiot to vote and saying, "Oh, we want more people voting," I feel that that's been a long time coming. That ridiculous notion of more people voting is good. I had seen that come in a long time, for decades, really. And they just opened it up to all kinds of shenanigans, is the term that Trump used. And I don't know what happened, but I know that blacks do not mind lying, cheating, stealing, and then crying racism if they're looked at all, you know? And I know that there are many other people that really do not mind lying and cheating and stealing. Look at the immigration situation. The both the Republicans and the Democrats are for illegals coming here and for them staying here. So if they're willing to have no integrity in our country, they're not going to have integrity in our election. And I feel that the culture is so rotted and weak and appeasing and going along with whatever the so-called establishment wants, that from the bottom to the top, from the state legislatures and the maybe even the poll workers to an extent, on up to Mike Pence, nobody was really willing to stand in the way for the most part, right? Paul Gosar maybe, but Paul Ryan, he said the fraud happened. And going forward, we need to make sure it doesn't happen again. But he didn't want to stop it. So there is I think that it doesn't even have to be a conspiracy. It may well be many conspiracies across the country, but it's also just a corrupt culture. And that's what we've been crying about. We've been complaining and protesting and being activists regarding election integrity for seemingly decades now. So this is not as if it's a new thing. And they're calling Trump a liar about the election is a lie itself. And they're pretending that that's when Twitter pretended that was glorifying violence to say, "I recognize the fraud happened, but just go home and be peaceful." Trump saying, you know, saying delegitimizing the election, in my opinion, rightly. Calling that glorifying violence, that's when I understood, oh, okay, that's they just think that they're mind readers, you know, that's why I couldn't tell a black woman on Twitter, you know what, lady, blacks killed more than twice as many whites as whites killed blacks, because that's glorifying violence, because supposedly white supremacists say stuff like that, you know, so I just feel that, it was just a sign of a corrupt culture. And it was very interesting. I didn't know going in what was going to come of 2020. I knew going in that Trump was going to win in 2016. But 2020, I really didn't know. And I saw all these social media companies and SoundCloud pushing for everybody to vote. And I just kind of knew that it was going to be a tough fight.
Yeah. Well, you saw how, you know, one thing that was very clear about the whole COVID quote unquote pandemic was how coordinated the media was, how coordinated all the talking heads on television, all the government officials and bureaucrats and leaders across the whole world. I mean, it really was a very coordinated PR campaign. And you saw like the same exact thing going on with the election, where, yep, you know, all the same talking points. Yeah, get out and vote. Your vote matters. Your vote counts. COVID, I think, was used primarily to facilitate the theft of the election by allowing all this mail-in balloting. And did you catch that that Time magazine article where they kind of like outlined and explained how they like stole the election?
I heard about it. I never actually went ahead and read it because I kind of like, I feel like I kind of already know, and
yeah,
who cares? But yeah, that was pretty big news. That was like, they're bragging about what they did, all the dishonesty that they did, is the feeling, the sense that I got from what other people said.
Oh yeah, totally. It was published in like early February. And it's the secret history of the shadow campaign that saved the 2020 election. So, of course, they like frame it as if they're like securing democracy by stealing the election. And it's a really interesting read. I've talked about it on another podcast, but it really does basically outline the deep state agenda to steal the election. And again, I think COVID played a huge part of it by allowing all this mail-in balloting.
And not, I mean, just going balloting, not just that, but you're right. But also, in the past, in past elections, I had one precinct that I could go to a certain day. When they did it this time, I could go to any precinct any day leading up to the election. And so it was just wide open, where when you're assigned a certain place to go, it's much more disciplined. You have to plan for it. You can't just say, oh, willy-nilly, and say, oh, let's Google this and how to, and where, what's the next place that's open to vote. They just opened it wide up. It is the mail-in ballots, but it's everything. They did early voting and just.
It was a total mess. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was no standards, no real rules. I mean, it was just a total free-for-all.
Yep.
Yeah, that certainly seemed to be the case. And of course, all of it was blamed on COVID, right? I mean, COVID was like the justification for everything. So yeah, I have no doubt that, I mean, and you know, again, going, and they were even saying this, they were even prepping the public for this, you know, oh, on election night, it's going to look like Trump is ahead and Trump is winning, but we got to wait and count all the ballots, right? I mean, they were even like, sort of like predicting that, you know, predicting, you know, sort of conditioning the public to accept their narrative that, oh, look, the voting's not over with. It may look like Trump is winning and he's got a commanding lead across the whole country practically, but just wait, there's more votes to count. So it's kind of tough to say exactly how they did it, but I think overall, there's no way that Joe Biden got, what did they say? He got 70 million votes, I think, was like the official numbers. There's no way. Even here in like Southern California, everywhere you go, I mean, I see nothing but Trump flags and you know, Trump supporters everywhere. Like, well, at least where I'm at, I'm not really like in LA like you are, but I'm kind of more
much right on the border with Orange County. I would see Biden and Bernie signs, but there's no hype for Biden.
There was no enthusiasm. Yeah, exactly.
And there's less for Kamala. So, you know, Kamala Harris. Like, I was shocked how unlikable she really was. And she was so unlikable that she dropped out earlier than I ever thought. I thought that she was going to be the one to get it because she's a black female, so-called black female. But I wasn't really surprised that they picked her for the running mate. But you're right. There's no energy for Biden. Biden doesn't even really have energy of his own.
Yeah. Oh, I know exactly. He finally did his first press conference the other day. Did you catch any of that?
I caught a tiny bit. I just can't really bring myself to be that interested in what he has to say.
No, it is just such an embarrassment, such a joke. And it's almost as if they're like, They got Trump out of office and now they're like just ushering in the total destruction of the country and doing it in a very blatant way with this, you know, fake Joe Biden presidency. This guy is just a total a total embarrassment.
Yep.
And it, yeah, I mean, his entire administration really is.
Right. It's the Obama administration all over again. Like some of the worst ones. Susan Rice, I think, and these people, and they're advancing, you know, the cultural decline and the acceptance of all of this LGBTQ stuff. Biden talked about, oh, if an 8-year-old feels like he's a transgender, he should be able to do that. And so, like, they've really amped up all of this madness, the 1619 project, all this anti-American propaganda. And then they have the gall to turn around and say that Trump's, what was it, the 1776 commission was counterfactual. He's just advancing this communist sort of revisionist history of America. And yet, like, they bring in all this stuff, and they're teaching the military this, giving them these books about the 1619 project and the anti-racism and all these strange books. Why not open it up for other revisionist history then, if you really want to expose them to alternative viewpoints? Because that's their excuse when confronted about it. But it's, you know, they're not going to be consistent. You can never expect that. So we need to be just as shameless, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty incredible what's going on. I mean, I sort of feel like you. It's just hard to watch any of this stuff anymore. It's such a disgrace and such a joke. It's such an embarrassment. Do you have any thoughts? Did you guys cover? I don't know if you guys covered it all. Like the whole QAnon phenomenon. Did you have any thoughts about that whole situation? There's still people saying that Trump is gonna return to office, you know, in the next month or whatever. There's still people that seem to be buying into this.
I don't, for some reason, I don't know that any of our fan base, our most dedicated listeners and chatters and stuff, were really even into the Q thing. I would see it when I would watch Trump speeches on, like, maybe Golden State Times or Right Side Broadcasting, the channels, like big channels like that. But in our group, like, and I didn't really look into it. I know that Marjorie Taylor Greene was kind of, you know, that woman was smeared as a QAnon supporter, but that didn't even really turn out to be exactly true. So I really don't even know what they truly believe, or if there are that many people who are, I mean, I know that they showed up to Trump rallies, so I know they exist, but I felt that it was just a hype and an excuse to censor conservatives.
Oh yeah, that was definitely a key aspect of it, no doubt about that. Well, and you certainly saw that in the aftermath of the alleged Capitol insurrection. You know how,
right?
Oh, look at all these QAnon supporters, these conspiracy theorists and white supremacists, and it was almost like a made for TV like, you know, media setup, like the whole Capitol situation in general. That's sort of my take. I watched Millie Weaver did a really, really good documentary about overall. Anyways, it's pretty good. There's a few things that I didn't necessarily agree with, but I think it was called what was it? PSYOP the Steal, I think was the name of it. And you can find it online. I don't know if you've seen it or heard about it or anything, but it did a pretty good job exposing how the whole situation really was like a total media setup.
Yeah. Charlottesville all over again, really.
Yeah, did you guys cover it the day that it happened? I mean, you guys were probably live while a lot of this was going on, right?
When the so-called the day after it, we covered it, because he spoke around like what, 1 p.m. his time, which is after Jesse's off and I'm kind of in the middle of my show. So I didn't really we didn't really notice it the day of. I mean, during the show, but the following day we covered it, and, you know, it looks bad. Some of the people were rioting. Some of them were like moshing with the cops or exchanging some blows. And that's not surprising to see, because the cops have been alienating, the policies have been alienating to a lot of men, a lot of whites, a lot of right wingers, and a lot of like ex-liberals, you know, because there's a whole bunch of former liberals who've come over to at least support Trump or be somewhat considered on the right. And so I was not surprised to see a little bit of scuffling with the cops, but it was not the insurrection that they were pretending it was, that's for sure. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, even the word insurrection, it's yeah. just so over the top, so ridiculous. And you know, of
I
course
call it it's a mostly peaceful protest. It was like,
yeah, it basically was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and see, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of the vast majority of people that were there were probably like just genuine Trump supporting patriots
yeah.
that had entirely valid concerns about the election and the, you know, what the media was reporting about the election. So, I mean, I sympathize totally with, you know, with their grievances, but just a few bad actors were allowed to kind of sabotage the whole thing. And, yep. Of course, the way the media covered it in general was entirely dishonest and framed in a way to present, you know, just average Trump supporters as like these evil potential terrorists.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. You ever talk to people on Reddit about it, like, and you compare it to the Black Lives Matter stuff, they're just completely divorced from reality. And I don't go along with their smears of, like Oath Keepers and stuff. Like, in my mind, those guys, they want to uphold their oath to defend the Constitution. Like, these are former police and military and stuff. I don't know anything about them. I'm sure since they're a popular organization, they get quite infiltrated by people who are either dishonest or on an ego trip or feds or whatever. But it just seems like another smear of, like, the alt-right is such terrible people, or the Proud Boys are such terrible people. It's just another pretense, that another boogeyman, instead of like looking at Antifa, Black Lives Matter, the Hispanics that attacked Trump supporters in San Jose. I mean, all of this stuff, these people are not decent people that we're up against at all.
Right. Yeah, and see, that's the thing, like, that the sort of insurrection from the left has been going on really since Trump was holding his rallies back in 2015, 2016.
Yep.
I mean, I went to a few. I went to the one in San Diego. I went to the one in Costa Mesa and, you know, saw footage of many others. The one in San Jose you mentioned. I mean, there were people just openly getting attacked.
Yeah.
And like, this is literally the definition of terrorism, and yet
yep.
there's no nationwide manhunt like the FBI is doing for the people involved in the Capitol protest.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
the
you
FBI,
know.
They're a bunch of liberals. I never realized until that was another thing that Trump exposed was the unmasking kind of the deep state. When you look at the people in the top, like, Are you serious? James Comey was the head of the FBI. What a pathetic person. Like, he's run by his wife and daughters who went to the Women's March, and he's supposed to be a Republican? Give me a break. These people are pathetic. They're just a bunch of liberals, including the so-called Republicans in the so-called intelligence communities and the Defense Department and these government organizations. They don't have any legitimacy in my mind anymore.
Oh yeah, no, they haven't had any legitimacy in my mind for a very long time. I'm curious. I know you're kind of more like up in like basically right in Los Angeles, if I'm not mistaken, or at least I know Jesse's studio is like right in the heart of Los Angeles. What was going on with the protests up there over the course of the past summer? Did you guys witness any looting, destruction, anything like that? Was any of that going on around you guys?
Oh yeah, I mean, not directly in around our area, but just north in Beverly Hills. We're kind of right south of Beverly Hills, between Beverly Hills and Culver City. And Beverly Hills, they were burning up the police cars, burning out places, just tearing stuff apart. Our Jesse Lee Peterson's new producer, Nick, and a couple of the other guys, they went out to Santa Monica and witnessed the destruction, the burning out of places and looting and stuff over there that took place on like a Saturday or a Sunday. I think it was a Sunday.
It was a Sunday. And yeah. I remember it. I remember watching their coverage of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild.
None of the cops, like, there's no cops doing anything about any of this.
Yep.
They basically allowed all this to happen. It was very similar here in Long Beach. I mean, a couple of the main streets got, like, just totally ransacked and looted. And, you know, there's footage of cops, like, right in the downtown part of Long Beach, literally just watching this all happen and not even lifting a finger to do anything. And it was like that all across the country. And it got so bad at certain points. I mean, the cops were literally, like, taking a knee in deference to the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean,
yeah, just joining in their own destruction, just inviting cop killings and everything else, just by pretending that they have any legitimate complaint, which they don't. I mean, I understand that cops can get on an ego trip and do wrong to, they do it to men all the time, they do it to whites, they do it to non-mask wearers, but this pretense that blacks are special victims or POCs are, or that there's undue police brutality against George Floyd or Mike Brown or any of these people, it's like every one of their main martyrs has come out to be like a false martyr. And the cops, if anything, were the victims in simply doing their job. I'm not convinced that Derek Chauvin did anything wrong.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, if you go back and watch, like, the footage, you know, the body cam footage, it seemed pretty clear to me that they were trying to basically, like, they were treating this guy with kid's gloves. I mean, they were not, like, violently attacking this guy by any means. And it's going to come out, it already has came out that he was pumped full of fentanyl. I mean, he had literally, like, 3 or 4 times the lethal dosage of fentanyl in his system, which is ultimately what led to his death. So, but you're right. Right in that, like, all of these martyrs of the BLM movement, if you really investigate and look into their background, look into the circumstances of their death, they are just total thug criminals, right? I mean, almost every single time.
And that was known about George Floyd the day that it went viral, you know?
Right. Like, he had a long history of going to jail, of selling drugs, of doing drugs, of robbing people. There was that story of him, and I think it was like him and like 2 other people, like, broke into a pregnant lady's home and, like, you know, robbed her basically. Like, this was not, this was not some saint like they would, you know, portray him as.
Yeah. And you have liberal white Christian org outlets talking about the gospel legacy of George Floyd. Give me a break. And the other thing is, with the way that they smeared Derek Chauvin, they tried to read his mind as though, look at the look on his face. He just enjoyed killing, murdering him on camera. And that reminded me so much of what they did to those Covington Catholic school boys after their pro-life rally at the Capitol at D.C. when the black Hebrew Israelites were cussing at them, and the Indian guy walked up to them. And you could see on the little short 5-second video that they showed, the Indian guy with pounding his drum, the Indian activist, walked up to Nicholas Sandman's face, and they said, oh, look at the racist smirk on his face. They think that they're mind readers of whites. I mean, I don't know if they think that they are, or if they just want to endlessly smear whites and the people eat it up who are predisposed to hate decent people.
Right.
It's wild.
Yeah. Well, again, it's just another perfect example of how totally malicious and dishonest the media is.
Yep.
You know, how they will go after and target, you know, just any white person, basically, any conservative, patriotic, Trump-supporting white American is basically enemy number one to the media.
Yeah. And you have, like, so-called conservatives who fall right along with it and play along until the truth comes out. And even then, they're just so wishy-washy. It's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not Jesse. Jesse will tell it like it is. You know, one thing I wanted to ask, and it's something that I've sort of, not necessarily critical, but to me, it's a big part of understanding what's going on, and it's the role of the organized Jewish community.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you – I know it's a very controversial topic, obviously, but I'm curious, do you have any thoughts on the matter? Do you think Zionism or organized Jewish power plays, you know, the central role in American politics and how our foreign policy is formulated, things like this?
You know, I don't know a lot about it, but it's like unquestionable that they are like Jews on the whole. I learned from talking with some of these guys that 70% of them voted for Hillary in 2016, and they're disproportionately, I don't know what it is, like they're either talented or they have nepotism or both, but they seem to like be very good at being personable and aggressive in like making deals and rising to the top. And so they're in control of a lot of organizations so disproportionately. They're such a small minority of the country, and yet they have so much outdo influence on the world, on movies, on media, in politics. Like they say that white people are taking up most of the government, but it's like not white Christians.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So
yeah, the Biden administration is like, oh my goodness, almost not every single one, but a huge percentage of the people running his administration are Jewish. Same thing with Trump before him. I mean, this is something that, you know, is obvious in any administration. And even the Congress. Yeah. Look at the Congress. Look like the most important people in Congress, many of them are Jewish. And it's something that, you know, if you even point that out, you're like denounced as an anti-Semite, right? I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, I know. But they're just so, like, they're all like female-minded liberals, and that includes the Republican Jewish people. Like, they tend to be, they believe in the racism thing. They kiss up to women. They are more likely to cave to the homosexuality, and they don't really believe in true freedom of speech the way that normal white manly thinking people do. And, you know, every now and then, I guess you get some decent ones who are solid, but on the whole, like, even, and I love Dennis Prager. Even Dennis Prager was like, anybody but Trump was how he started out. And I was like shocked. Like, why would you're supposed to be pro man, pro decency. That's all Trump, pro like being real and genuine. But there is like, on one, it's like a blind spot for some. The culture is corrupt. They're not Christians. And I think that it's just a female spirit that dominates them. And because they just have a natural talent and cunning, the evil that they bring is more subtle and sinister in a sense than like the degeneracy brought by blacks. And I know that they're like kind of supporting the worst aspects of the black community too. So it's it's very interesting.
Susan Rosenberg, like a old school Jewish communist terrorist, was the head of like fundraising for BLM for a long period of time. Yeah, once it was sort of exposed, I think they like officially took her off the board or whatever. But yeah, these are the types of people that have long been involved in the whole civil rights movement, in the promotion of homosexuality, of transgenderism, of open borders. I mean, all of these like far left radical, feminism, all of these like far left radical movements have been championed and led primarily by Jews and by the organized Jewish community more generally.
Yeah.
But again, it's something that you can't really like openly talk about without, you know, risking being denounced as an anti-Semite, as a racist, as a conspiracy theorist, when you're like literally just like pointing out basic facts that you can go look up. And in many cases, well, like I have a huge section on my website where it's called News from the Jews, where I'm like just citing articles I find in explicitly Jewish publications where they're boasting about their influence in the government or their influence in the media or whatever it is. And yet again, you know, just simply pointing this stuff out is like very, very controversial and taboo and, you know, again, it would be considered anti-Semitic. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that there were some of these like Midwestern states. They had their first Jewish woman be appointed to, or not appointed, elected as a, like a local state legislator or whatever. And they are promoting that. And it's like, these are some of the worst people, most dishonest, like I said, female-minded, liberal, unreasonable people that you could ever, like, you wouldn't even want them in your country much, or making decisions, but they're like, and it's women sometimes. It's so bizarre. And then the men are really no better, like Chuck Schumer and all them. And what's wild too is, like, Jesse Lee Peterson loves the Jews and he loves Israel. You know, as Christians, most of us were taught, like, be pro-Israel, right? And even then when he's telling, he gets calls from people who get really, I don't know what the word is, but they're driven to the point of distraction about Jewish people and just how evil they are. He like asks them if they love the Jews, and he's telling people, love, don't hate, right? Don't hate evil, overcome evil with good. And even then he's still getting, censored, and his video about don't hate Jews gets taken down from YouTube as hate speech. It's so like
divorced wow.
from reality.
Yep, that's clown world right there for you.
Yep. It's wild.
Yeah, and that's incredible. You know,
it brings no light to the situation too, because people are like, well, Jesse, see, you're a shill, and they still censor you. So like it just drives people to anger, and they're just blinded with rage about the injustice. And Jesse is like the best friend to whites, and yet they're thinking that he's a shill or he's paid by Jews, and they just make up stuff in their mind that isn't true because they're just so used to being betrayed by people that they trusted. They're starting to see Jesse that way, and that's not even how he is. He just loves everybody, so it's wild.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, James, we are right about at the hour mark, and I wanted to ask you a couple other questions just about living, sure. about living in Los Angeles, living in Southern California. I've been here for about 12 years now almost, and it is really – it's almost like indescribable, like the stuff that you will see just driving around Los Angeles, like all the homeless people yeah. and just the madness you will see. It is really shocking. It is something that I don't think people wouldn't even believe it. I mean, you almost have to just come here and see it for yourself. You can't describe it. I mean, it is really, really a huge problem here now.
Yeah. No,
it's been a problem for a while, but I don't know.
No, it's exploded, though.
It has, really, yeah. It seems yep. like it. I mean, you will see homeless people literally everywhere.
Yeah. No, and they're shameless. Like, they have tents and tarps and just rows and rows of stuff. Like, one person can have a setup that's, like, bigger than my house. And it's just disgusting. And then you have these stupid homeless advocates. No, they call themselves unhoused advocates, right? People who stand up for the property rights of these people. And in Echo Park over here, Echo Lake, east of me, they tried to clean up the area and put these people bus them over to some hotel room that they can stay in. And they cleaned up Echo Park Lake. But the activists are part of the problem. And after Garcetti was, I mean, locally here in Los Angeles, I know that it's bad all up and down the West Coast. Mayor Eric Garcetti kind of, I don't know what he did or didn't do, but it just got worse in the last 7 years or 8 years that he's been mayor here in Los Angeles. Even though we had that Mexican guy, Antonio Villaraigosa, before, who was, I didn't consider him any better. But it has encroached into our area like I never dreamed was possible. And it's disgusting. They're taking dumps in the street, everything.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I haven't been to Venice Beach for quite a while, but I mean, Venice Beach is like one of the most iconic parts of LA, right? I mean, historically, and you go there now and it's all homeless people. I mean, they have like literally taken over entire parts of the city. And it's almost, it is, when I say everywhere, I mean, like, it's not just like downtown or like under freeways. You could drive all over the whole city. The west side, you know, out by the beach in Long Beach. I mean, everywhere you go, you will see homeless encampments and you will see some very, very disgusting scenes. And all of this is facilitated by like, as you said, you mentioned some of these like activist type organizations, but like even like government policy has been to either put them up in a hotel for a few days or a week or two. I mean, how is that going to help them? Frankly, what the problem is the vast majority of these people living on the streets have drug problems, have psychological problems. And it's almost at a point where how can you even rehabilitate these people? You know, I don't think you can. Yeah. A lot of them, I don't think that you really can rehabilitate them. I know that sounds like pretty harsh, but I mean, when you see some of the sites that you see in Los Angeles, you'd probably be saying the same thing. I mean, there's just no helping a lot of these people.
Right. Yeah. They need to either be in jails or like bring back the asylums or something.
Yeah.
Or deport them, find an island. I honestly do not care. I want to deport the advocates as well. Like send them to live with them. On like Catalina, Catalina is already occupied, but it's so evil. We run them off anytime that we see them in front of our building, anywhere near us on the sidewalk where we are. We'd say you can't be here. You have to move, and we wake them up if they're there at 5 a.m. and just rattle on the door and run them off because we can't stand for this. And nobody thinks like a man to deal with them like a man. Everybody thinks like women and feels sorry for them when they're perpetrators. They're not victims. And like you said, they're dangerous people.
Yeah.
It's not a good situation.
A lot of them are. And it's crazy too. I mean, you'll be in like, I was just in Koreatown a couple of weeks ago and, you know, pretty nice part of LA and there's like nice, you know, condos, apartment buildings. And then you walk outside and right on your sidewalk, it's, you know, a row of homeless people setting up their camps and setting up their tents and stuff. So like, what do you do? I mean, you just allow this to happen. It's really sad. I mean, California is such a beautiful place, but man, it has got some major, major problems.
A friend and I were going to go to a restaurant, a bar to have a bite. And we saw this homeless guy, like, hanging around the place, taking a dump, like, right on the side. And we just turned around and went home. It's killing businesses just maybe as much as COVID, you know, the communist shutdowns in the name of the virus are killing businesses. It's so evil that the so-called leadership is allowing this to stay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we need some decent leaders to step forward and tell the truth about some of this stuff. I did see that Gavin Newsom's recall, it looks like it is going to be going forward, which is pretty incredible. I think they got – let me see. I was actually just reading an article about it the other day. I think they submitted over 2 million million signatures. I think they only needed like 1.2 million or something. I think they needed 1.5. So they have more than enough, but they want to make sure, you know, all of them are valid, you know, registered voters. You know, they don't want to get anything like thrown out or whatever. So it seems like
some people think that Trump actually won California. I don't know if that's true. I don't really have high hopes of a Newsom replacement, even if he is replaced. Remember when you may not remember, but I remember less than 20 years ago, I voted in Arnold Schwarzenegger to be the governor of California because he, like, somebody else was recalled, like Gray Davis or something. And Schwarzenegger was such a disappointment. And to this day, he's, like, worse than ever. He's just such a coward and a kiss-up, right? And so I am happy if Newsom does get recalled, but it's going to take a lot more than just a political win or a big political win or two. We need to really turn around the culture and just be examples of strength. And like you said, start running for local office, have decent people start running for local office and be, bold. And maybe we can turn things around. Never give up.
Yes, absolutely. Well said, man.
Yeah.
Well, James, thanks a lot for taking the time to speak with me today. This was long overdue, so I'm glad we were able to make it happen. Yeah, it's good to stay in touch, and you guys are doing great work up there, so please do keep it up. I'm going to have a link over to your website. I know you have the HateCom, and then I also follow you on Twitter, so I'll have links over to your Twitter profile and to your website as well.
Appreciate that. That's great. And you are the Realist is it realistreport.com?
It's therealistreport.com, correct.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Cool. All right, James. Well, hey, man, I will stay in touch and keep up the good work, man.
Thank you. What an honor. Nice talking with you, finally.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Take care, man.
All right. You too.